big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Mick Wall podcast, starring the one and only, he's here,
yeah.
Johnny Hotton.
Yeah.
How are you, John?
Good afternoon, everyone.
Yes, yes. So, John, following
the intense debate you kicked off on GB News, I mean, it's a firestorm. It's the only way you can describe it.
Who knew there'd be so much controversy around
the
fat-bottomed girls?
The Daily Express has come out saying, woke Britain has gone insane.
Well, you know, I write for the Sunday
Express. I lay the pass on, you put it in the back of the net. That's how this relationship works.
As the acting chairman of the anti-woke brigade, yeah. Oxfordshire branch,
yeah.
I am a writer for the, well, when I say a writer, more of a portraitist.
Yeah, portraiture. Sketcher.
Yeah, life sketches.
Yeah, like when Miles Davis would do a jazzy sketch of a well-known number.
Yeah, I riff on it.
Yeah.
I riff on it.
Yeah, that's what the readers of the Sunday Express really want, is a kind of Kerouac-style exploration of where writing can go.
On a Sunday morning.
On a Sunday morning.
In the review section.
Yeah. When you've just read your, you know, this is anti-woke madness for 26 pages.
And you come and to then, me.
Is the Sunday Express the one that did the World War II bomber found on the moon?
No, what was that paper called? The Daily Sport.
The Daily Sport. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. See, now that was a paper.
Yeah.
See, they should
bring
that
back. Free bacon sandwich with everything.
Nothing wrong with that, mate.
Yeah.
Right, so on today's very special edition of the show, we're going to have a look at the world of, if you will, rockumentary.
Oh, very good.
Because there are two. Now, I was going to say new. One of them is very old, but it's only just going to be available to view for the first time. And another one is brand new, but is based on the 80s. So
it's like a kind of philosophical question. Which one is old and which one is new?
Exactly.
Is it the new one that you haven't seen because it's old? Or is it the one about old times that's new?
You see now,
which one's newer, Mick?
These are the questions we're here to tackle
on
this pod.
Yeah,
you know, many of our readers are doctors of philosophy. I have discovered.
Yeah,
certainly.
Well, their interpretation of the word perhaps.
Well, there you are.
You know, Axel's interpretation of the word perhaps.
What, the song he wrote about me?
Yeah, possibly.
The new one. Again.
New, we're constantly having this
old
debate. Yeah.
Well, that's the nature of rock.
Of
this
life.
Is where we are
in
the sort of first quarter of the 21st century.
Yeah.
We've only got to wait another 10 years. We'll have AI. There'll be two AIs, you and me, doing an AI.
But hopefully our consciousness will have been uploaded into the AI.
Yes.
And we just then live forever.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It'd be great.
Yeah, I suppose. The new documentary, as in it's only just been made and released, but deals with the long ago. It's called, it's a brilliant title, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's called I Wanna Rock, the 80s metal dream. Have you heard about this
one,
John?
I only because you told me about it. haven't otherwise heard about it. No.
Oh,
I don't go around.
Everybody's talking about it.
That's the first thing
it.
I think in the morning. Oh, I wonder if there's a new documentary about the 1980s heavy metal scene out today.
Well, one of our readers from that fair isle across the ocean, the 40 shades of green, Kells,
have written in.
One of our readers wrote in to let me know about this because he said, I'm in it.
You see.
I'm in it. I'm like, what do you mean I'm in it? I mean, I know I do some dodgy stuff, but surely I'd remember.
Yeah.
No, what it is, I don't know if you know, but back in the 80s, I used to do a weekly TV show on Sky.
Did you? Yeah,
called The Monsters of Rock.
Before it was actually called Sky. It was, wasn't it?
No, it was always called Sky. It's called like Sky Tracks, Sky Train.
See, it was called lots of things. It's called Sky B.
No, that was There was B something B.
BSB.
Which was the rival to Sky. Right. And a bit like VHS and
Betamax.
BSB or whatever the fuck they were. They were like the Betamax. They had it all going on, but no one watched them.
Yeah.
Sky was like the VHS.
Sky hired Mick Wall.
I came
Hence,
in.
Hence, they became the VHS of satellite broadcasters.
Very successful.
Yeah.
Very happily successful. That's what VHS stands for, John. You know that.
Yeah.
I clicked on what he'd sent me. Sure enough, it was your old meat, Mickey Wall, as a kid.
As if, when you were the kid.
When I was
the
kid.
I remember when you were the kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Leather jacket.
Yeah, mullet.
Disgusting T-shirt.
Yeah.
I was sick on it.
Yeah.
Now, when you say mullet, what do you mean
is... cocky attitude.
Oh, no. Yeah. Cheeky. Cheeky. Yeah, no. Cheeky come hither.
Yeah. I would describe it very much as a cocky attitude.
No, God
the
bless
kid
you.
At the back of the bus. That's what you.
Well,
were.
Yeah, this has a certain charm.
Yeah,
you know, like you've heard of the crafty Cockney.
Yeah, you.
I was the cheeky sex object. So anyway,
there's a clip
of your old me. No mullets.
Hang
just
on, this is
so you're fucking... it's driving me... Granddad, turn the fucking phone off.
Carry on.
Oh, carry on, okay.
As in the words of Bohemian Rhapsody, carry on.
In the words of fat-bottomed girls, you were such a huge big fanny. I like to shag my nanny. One day she said, come on, boy, climb aboard. I said, you must be feckin' joking. She said, you're the one poking. I said, fat bottom girl, you make the rocking world go round.
Yeah, as Eamon Holmes rightly said, those lyrics are disgusting.
Well, obviously they didn't make the final mix. No. But live, that's
live,
always...
Live, they go down a storm.
They get the crowd singing along.
Yeah.
So anyway, I click on the link and... Lo and behold,
knock me down with a feather.
There's my very good self.
Yeah.
On the set of the Monsters of Rock Show, the show I used to
present,
I may
Sky.
Have mentioned.
Yeah.
And the guests are Poison.
Oh.
Brett and Cece.
Excellent.
And of course, it's their first album. So they're like puppies.
And Brett was super like that, wasn't he?
But Cece was also kind of, I'm Cece.
Yeah.
Because that's his real name.
Yeah, because he'd just seen off Slash, hadn't he? Because Slash went for the gig in Poison.
He didn't get
and
it.
And CC saw him off.
And not only did CC see him off.
Yeah.
Not only did CC see Slash off. Like, Slash off, Slash.
Yeah.
I'm CC. See what I mean?
I'm the number one around
I
here.
Am CC.
I'm the desperado.
See this? I'm CC.
Yeah.
And not only did he do that, he stole Slash's top hat.
He did. So he'd done all those things by now, and they made an album famously for about $20,000 or something.
One of the greatest albums
and
of the 80s.
And it sold bazillions.
And it was when they were managed by, you're all me, Rod Smallwood, bloody hell, they'll never be as good as me.
Yeah. And he was proved right. They never last as long as Maiden. I think he was right about that.
Yeah, but they were fun. I loved that first album.
Yeah, what were the songs on it again?
Talk Dirty to Me.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I Want to Rock.
Yeah, I think you're...
Oh, that could be where the...
Yeah, wasn't that was Twisted Sister.
Oh, yeah.
I Want to Rock. I Want to Rock.
Oh.
Yeah,
Twisted What was the Poison one? I Want to... I won't forget you, babe. I won't forget you. Remember that one?
No.
Oh, fuck off. That was...
No.
Get the fuck. Okay, I'm going to have to remind you. But so there was a clip of your old mate, me, back when I was young and fluffy. And, you know, my bottom wasn't fat yet. In fact, it never was. I seem to be just talking to myself here, John.
Jump in at any moment. Yeah, because you're struggling. What readers he is trying to do
is find
this song on his phone and speak at the same time, which he's incapable of.
Don't tell me you don't know this.
There's CC. Slash couldn't do that, mate.
Nah, dream on, Slash.
Yeah. Ricky Rocket. Oh, yeah. I tell you what, that is the sound of the 80s, mate.
When I look back, I remember some words you said to me. It's better to have lost at love than never to have loved at all. I won't forget you.
I do remember that song. I just didn't get it from the song that you sang before.
I was referring to the original demo.
Yeah,
clearly.
Yeah,
you
know, clearly.
If you know.
Yeah.
But that stuff about... you know, it's better to have lost at love than never to have loved at all. You know, I'd never heard that before.
Meaningful.
I'd never heard that before. See, that's deep.
Yeah.
People would say of Poison.
They're deep. Well, you know, you think of also in the band, who we've not really discussed, Ricky Rocket
well on known and on statesman. On bass, Bobby Dahl.
Bobby Dahl got chucked out or left because...
He refused to dye his hair blonde.
No, because Ricky Rocket or someone had an affair with his girlfriend. That's right, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something
you
like
see,
that.
That's a, see,
it might not have been Ricky Rocket. It might have been someone else.
Might not have been. but Bobby, you see, was always the mysterious one because the rest were all blonde.
They were all out knocking his girlfriend off.
The rest were all naturally blonde.
Yeah.
And
hey, guys, used to come in the studio. Hey, guys, has anyone seen Jeannie? Well, no. Well, I haven't seen her, mate. Yeah.
No, she's with Maybe that she's blonde in
the,
guy.
Yeah, I think she was going that way to the canteen, I think, yeah.
With that blonde
guy.
She's
just gone down the 7-Eleven. Quick.
With that blonde guy.
Ricky, put your trousers on. Yeah.
That blonde guy, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They went down the doodah with the blonde guy.
I don't know what
guy.
I'm doing.
Hey. So, Bobby... Yeah, because wasn't he supposed to be the leader of the band?
Was he?
I don't know.
It was Brett, wasn't it? Brett was always the leader of the gang.
Well, yes, but, you know, in Bobby's mind,
maybe he was the leader of
the... Brett was the leader of the gang.
Yeah.
Bobby was the leader of the band.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he was the only one who didn't have blonde hair.
Yeah.
He had jet black hair.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
All natural.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Well, yeah, I suppose it made him stick out. Though,
yeah, in Poison, yeah.
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 Of course, they say the musical genius of Poison was C.C. DeVille.
Of course. Well, I mean, they say. There is no they say about it, is there? What happened when C.C. left? Down, and they got Richie Kotzen, who's, I'm sure... excellent guitarist, but it was like when
it was like the Cove,
it was like when old Cove got Steve Vai.
Because Kotzen was very technically,
he'd had John Sykes, he'd done the proper Led Zeppelin impersonation on 1987.
Inspiration. He was channeling.
And then you've got Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Who's just made, you know, all the guitarists in the world go on about him doing this, that and the other. And I saw Steve Vai with Dave Lee Roth, and he was brilliant with Dave Lee Roth.
Mm.
But because he's knocking off Eddie Van Halen, you know, I mean, old Cuff's not going to get Eddie Van Halen.
Well,
it's like you
always say, John, you've always said this to me, you know, Steve Vai is horribly overrated,
yes.
and you wouldn't piss on him if he was light in the gutter. Whereas I have always said, no, I strongly disagree. I think you're talking about truly gifted.
Because I think you were going around crawling around LA with David, telling him how brilliant he was. And how, if you could just speak into this microphone, David, for a little bit longer so I can sell it all around the world.
Hey, I wish I'd recorded the interview, the famous one that lasted for 12 hours, and he wouldn't let me record.
Oh, DLR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so there I am, like a spring lamb.
A spring chicken.
Back when I was a spring chicken.
Yeah.
And they were even springier and more chicken-like.
And more lamb-like. Because they were like enthusiastic bleating. When you see a lamb bouncing after its mother.
Exactly.
That's what Poison were like, bouncing after the money.
They were. And it made it fun.
Yeah.
Because they weren't all hung up on all this new album's about my attempted suicide.
Yeah, I'll tell you what was good was the first time I stayed in the Riot House, the Hyatt on Sunset.
Oh, yeah.
As I made my great...
It still was, in your day, it still was the Riot House.
It still was the Riot House. And as I made my grand entrance from the lift into the lobby, to be met by... You remember that you used to have a glass front?
Yeah.
You know, like where the revolving doors were. To be met by, you know, without exaggerating, hundreds of women pressed up against the glass and screaming. And I thought, I was just thinking, normal.
You just thought, they've heard
I'm in town, you know.
You can't blame them.
And then sort of had a look around.
It's hormonal, you can't blame them.
Yeah, had a quick look around, discovered that, Poison were in the lobby.
Oh.
And that, in fact, the screams might, and I say might, because I'm still not sure to this day, but might have been directed to them as well as at me.
Do you know, I honestly did have a very similar experience at the Riot House.
Did you?
With Slash.
Right.
He was staying there, and I was staying across the street at the Mondrian.
Yeah.
Which was a bit more upscale.
It was. The Mondrian's very nice.
Because they weren't quite big hits yet. And so...
You were. That's you
see,
were
I was.
Slash was at the Riot House, you were at the Mondrian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Proper pecking order.
Exactly.
So I actually went over literally across the street, the boulevard, to go get him, to bring him back.
Hold his hand across the road.
Well, because I've got the expense account. He's got no money.
Yeah.
And so we're walking across and...
Holding hands.
And I can hear like a...
Did you say...
Because you know, Standard Boulevard's really... You can't walk across, you've got to run.
As Martin Amis said amazingly in Money, when John Self's in LA trying to cross the road, guy goes to him, "Hey, buddy, if you want to be on the other side of the road, you've got to be born there." And that's what trying to cross Sunset Boulevard's like, or Hollywood Boulevard.
Well, you'd know more about that, obviously.
I was more a Hollywood Boulevard guy.
That was Boys Town, wasn't it? So I see you.
I think you'll find that was Star Town.
Oh, was it?
I was coming out of the Hollywood Roosevelt, which was my hotel of choice.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. Wasn't that all where the hookers used to ply their trade?
I think
you're... The lovely ladies of the night.
No. That was the Tropicana.
Oh, the Tropicana. So there's some sort of commotion, you know, but it's behind you and you're focusing on him. Long story short, we get across the road and, as the Sun would have put it back in the day, there were a bevy of lovelies. No, a bevy of bikini-clad lovelies.
Yeah.
I went, "Look at that." He goes, "Oh, man, they've been following me around all day." I went, "What?" So we go in the Mondrian, and on the first floor or somewhere, there's a bar by the pool. We go in there to do the interview, and suddenly all these bikini-clad lovelies, who all looked about 18 or something, they're all there, but it's like we're sitting in this bar, then there's a big wall, a big glass wall. There is doors and windows, but they're stood right there so they can just stand with their bodies against the pound the glass.
Yeah. Go, Mick, Mick.
Who's that weird guy you're with, Mick?
We used to love Slash, but now we love Mick Wall from Sky.
There you go.
Yeah.
In fact, several of them were interviewed on this documentary, I
understand. Yes, that's right.
They testified
to
my allure.
Yes.
And I said, I'm like, Slash, you know, what do they want? He goes, oh, I don't know, an autograph?
I went, well, you were so naive in those days. What do they want?
Well, I didn't really mean... I kind of knew what they wanted. Yeah. What I meant was, how can we get rid of them? Yeah, what can you... Is there anything you can give them to make them go away?
Ladies, what can I do for you? So you should walk over there.
So,
how do we make this work?
Well, he ended up signing their breasts and tummies and, you know.
Still couldn't get
I said, do you want mine too? Yeah. No, apparently not.
No.
Weird.
No. So, if you could just sign this restraining order, that'll do.
Years later. I mean, I wrote that up in the story at the time. This is 88. And years later, 25 years, 30 years later, longer, I'm writing a book about Guns N' Roses. And I recount this story. And the lawyers came in and said, you can't do that. I'm like, what do you mean? He would sign girls' breasts 50 times a day. This is LA in 88.
He's really got a girl's breast out of his hand.
And a pen in one hand, a breast in the other, top hat at a jaunty angle, cowboy boots over there where he's taken them off. So anyway, I clicked on this link and there I was.
Yeah.
I said to myself two things.
Yeah, I said, that's me.
The way we were, you know.
Yeah.
I said two things to myself. Number one was, I wonder if I'm in any other bits.
Yeah, because maybe they've just bought up the old Sky archive.
Well, maybe, but I never had a contract with Sky. I never had anything in writing. So as far as I can tell, that's my property.
Yeah, yes.
You see, John?
Yes.
Now, if you could get your lawyer to sort out Axel.
Yeah, so you should pursue Axel first.
Sue Axel first.
Well, I mean, have the makers of I Want to Rock got as much money as Axl Rose, do you think?
I think it's called
I Wanna Rock. Yeah.
Do they have as much money as Axl Rose?
Yeah.
Well, there's only one way to find out, baby.
They will be finding out. You will be ascertaining the contents of their bank account.
Yeah, when I go
for misuse of your image. Your and image rights. What are your image rights worth these days?
Well, you know, a lot. Big number.
Yeah,
big number.
Big number.
Did you watch that televised version of Money that they re-showed recently?
I did, yeah.
Really funny.
It was all right. It's very
not
difficult.
Not as good as a book.
No, because,
But I love that bit in the first episode where he goes in to do the pitch. And he throws back a lot because he's slept for about 20 hours and he's missed the breakfast meeting. And the driver that was going to take him to the big import is gone. So he gets a cab. He's pouring with sweat. As he walks in, he sees a glass of whiskey, chucks it back. And he goes in and there's these three, like, stone-faced investors. So then he lights a cigarette, which even back then in LA, you know, lighting a cigarette was kind of like... I see. And he goes, my name's John Self, and I forget what the next bit was, but he says, I'm here to make a film.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And it's a family-oriented film. There's a dad, a wife, or a mum, a dad, a child, and a big bag of heroin. And you see one of the other producers going,
Yeah, that's right.
And then it cuts them coming out of the meeting, and the other guy's like, you're a genius.
You did it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are we on about here? So, So, do we recommend this documentary?
I don't know. I recommend... I find it hard to... I think someone who wrote it into you on their parents' stationery or however the missives come
reader,
into this
regular,
show...
Regular reader.
Yeah. Said that actually it was a very sad film, didn't they?
In
seriousness, they said... And I actually...
Bleak.
To be... Serious for a very brief moment.
Oh, yes, please.
I do concur with that because when you look at the, and we've said before on this podcast, when you look at the histories of, you know, Axl, of Nikki Six, of lots of those guys, they had very fractured, disturbed upbringings, and that kind of created the wildness that was going about, the nihilism and the...
But isn't that the case with not just LA in the 80s, but I mean...
Oh, anyway, yeah, but I mean, that's what this film is... If the film is identifying that as a significant factor in what happened, I would agree with it. That's what I would say.
Oh, so what you're saying is you were very depressed in the 80s.
No.
Are you saying you felt bleak?
No.
Did you feel bleak, John?
No.
As you walked into the riot
house, as a bevy of bikini-clad lovelies. Yeah, as I walked into the Mondrian from my suite to the pool.
Well, you know...
Thinking, this is the life. Yeah.
Ross Halfin, a photographer... One or
apparently,
two people.
Well, the Orange Goblin.
Yes,
once referred to
back in the 80s. Yeah. He and I did a lot of work together in LA, and oh my god, I remember we were supposed to go and play tennis one morning, and I didn't get back to the hotel till about 6 a.m. Funnily enough, I'd been out with me old mate Rod Smallwood.
Yeah,
he used to own Jimmy Cagney's old.
Yes,
house.
He did. Yes.
Oh, well, you know, you can imagine if we'd been up all night what we were doing.
Yeah, chatting through the new Iron Maiden tour schedule or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mick, do you think it makes sense to go from Budapest straight through to Vienna, or would you go the other way and go into Spain?
That's an interesting philosophical question, Rod.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me just... Well, I don't know, Rod. What do you think? You know, so I got back to the hotel completely wasted, twisted beyond belief. I thought, there's no way I'm going to go and play fucking tennis. So I wrote Ross a note because there's no internet. So you go to the desk at like 6 a.m, you know, looking like the walking dead. You say, can I? I've got a bit of notepad. So I wrote this thing. And I asked him to put it under his door.
Yeah.
So they did. He had it laminated. He had it laminated and he kept it for years and he would show people as I was being introduced to him.
Yeah.
And it was like, Ross, underlined, you know, can't do tennis. Was with Rod, underlined. You know. And then in big letters, unavoidable. Plus extra... Yeah. Thoughts and PS and you know, like so that was I suppose that could have been seen as to take it back
to money. I mean, that was the great humiliation of John Self, isn't it, when he has to play tennis against his producer Fielding Goodney.
Yeah,
and Amos comes out with the great line of, you know, when British people say they can play tennis, they don't mean what American people mean when they say they can play tennis.
And what they mean is they can play tennis. Yeah. You see these balls whizzing past him.
This is the thing that you have to know about money that makes it 20 times funnier whether you're watching the BBC production of it or whether you're reading the book, which I recommend, is that the book is about, as Amos once said, a fat bloke making a film, which is what it's about. But it's based on Amos's own experience of scripting a film called Saturn 3 that was actually on TV not so long ago, which is this terrible sci-fi.
Does he get a credit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He wrote the script. He wrote the screenplay and was on the set. And the reason that he then transmuted those experiences into the film of Money, because in the book, the sort of well, the stars of Saturn 3 are Kirk Douglas, Farrah Fawcett, and Harvey Keitel, who become in the book Long Island, who's the fantastic Kirk Douglas character, who's always nude, you know, and he's like, won't do any scene where he's not naked with about three women, and I'm really fucking them, John. I'm really fucking her in this scene. She's screaming, John. And then there's so he plays the father. Farrah Fawcett is the Butch Beausoleil character, who's like the femme fatale. And then Harvey Keitel is Spunk Davis, who the John Self character is trying to convince he has to change his name because he can't be called Spunk. And Amos said he actually went to dinner with Harvey Keitel one night in his hotel room, and for no reason at all, Harvey Keitel was stripped to the waist having dinner. And it's just insane. It's just, yeah, the book is so funny.
Love the book.
The Harvey Keitel character, Spunk Davis, has just made a movie called Prehistoric, which is a huge hit, but he doesn't have to talk. He doesn't have to say anything in it. He just plays a caveman.
That could have been Vinnie Jones.
Yeah,
he did
it's
something
just,
like that, didn't
it's
he?
Fantastically funny, the whole book.
I'm going to read the book again because it was a huge favourite of mine in like 84. It's still
the only book that's ever made me cry with laughter. Yeah. I mean, the bits with Long Island when he's, you know, refuses not to be new. And he's like, he strips in front of John Self and is this the body of a 70-year-old man, John? John Self is like, yeah, very much is. Yeah.
So,
instead of watching I Wanna Rock,
the 80s metal dream,
do yourself a favour and read Money.
Or, because it always the same, if you read the book, nothing you see on screen will ever touch you.
No. Buy the Guns N' Roses book.
And I haven't watched all of the Money. I've recorded it.
Yeah.
I sort of watch it in 10-minute bursts. Yeah. It's so appalling, but at the same time amusing.
Yeah.
Buy the book. And if you are interested in the 80s, there are very good Guns N' Roses books available.
Yes. Yes.
What else? Very
Poison. Have you done Poison?
Book? No, yeah, but there's an idea. Yeah. You know, ooh. There's an idea. What could we call it?
Well, following your usual template, it'll be called something like Talk Dirty to Me.
You see?
Yeah.
Now that's a commercial idea, my
friend. Thank you.
Any publisher readers out there, you know. So now, at the same time, there is another, which I have seen, extraordinary music.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Both historic and largely
new.
Unseen.
New.
Well, new in the sense that you haven't been able to see it.
Yeah.
And now you can see it.
Yeah. So is it new? I think it's new.
No, it's not new. Okay. I went to, it wasn't like a private showing. It was one of those things they set up where they, you know, they want distributors to come and see, or people in the business, media, spread the word. Yeah. And what it is it's a documentary.
And you're now fulfilling that obligation.
I am.
10 years later.
Over 20 years.
Is it too late? I don't know.
It's 23 years later. It's a documentary made by Penelope Spheeris, who made the definitive 80s.
The documentary of 1980s heavy metal in LA, The Decline and Fall of Western Civilization, Part 2. : The Metal Years.
You see, now, that's just not as good a title as I Wanna Rock, you see? Penelope definitely, bless her, she's passed now, isn't
Penelope
she?
Spirit. That's the how long it took great. You to fucking talk about her film.
So this is a documentary film made about the 1999 American Ozfestival.
Right.
Do you know who the
good
sort of
material there?
It's a great movie. I mean, we saw it at is it the National Film Theatre?
Yes,
it's one of those.
The NFT. Yes.
The DJ announcer MC.
MC Hammer.
No, on the tour was Crusher.
Oh, right. Okay.
And at the end of the movie, they did a Q&A, and Crusher was the first one to stand up and ask a question. His question was, I did the whole tour. How come I'm not in 1 second of the movie?
Good question.
And Sharon had to answer that.
I thought you were going to say his question was, where's my money?
No, that was my question.
Yeah. And what was Sharon's answer?
Oh, well, you were, you see, you were. And this might not even be the finished cut. You know, in other words, no one fucking cares about you, mate. We've got Ozzy, and we've got Slipknot, who were a thing at the time.
Yeah, the
very
big
new
thing, yeah, yeah.
We've got, you know.
Who else was on the tour?
Oh, they were all on the tour.
All of them were on
All of them. They were all there.
Wasn't it someone like, was it Pantera, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Are they anything like Pantera?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. So anyway, it was really, really nice.
Do you want me to talk while you're looking it up? Because famously, you find that challenging.
No, not so much challenging as
impossible.
Time-consuming, I'm going to tell you who was on the Ozfest lineup in 99. You wait for this. I can remember it like yesterday.
But also, it did spring from, I mean, we should say Ozfest, which was named for Ozzy and created by Sharon. Did it not spring from the fact that Lollapalooza, which was the super cool touring festival, because Perry Farrell sort of came up with the idea of this touring festival, didn't he? So,
called Lollapalooza.
Yeah, so it was
a
festival.
But it had to be cool.
Yeah, and it had to be cool. So it had people like Jane's Addiction who Perry.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was probably Porno for Pyros by then, wasn't it? That was his band after Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Pyro.
Yeah. So it's all of those people, you know, would have had Faith No More and people like that. Yeah.
Red Hot Chili.
Yes.
Peppers,
yes. All of that. When we say cool, we don't mean like completely cool.
No, we mean American cool.
Yeah, American cool. Yeah.
So Sharon gets in touch and says, how about Ozzy, Sabbath, whatever?
Yeah.
And Perry Farrell told her Ozzy wasn't cool enough for Lollapalooza. So typical Sharon. She went, oh, really? Well, fucking see about that. And the very next year.
I'm nicking your idea, mate.
Yeah, but I'm calling it Ozfest.
Yeah, and I'm doing it better.
Yeah, and Lollapalooza literally faded into dust, and Ozfest became the biggest money-making, high-profile American tour for several hits in a row. So in 1999, John, because I'm doing a lot of this from memory. You know? On the main stage, Sabbath headlining, but also Rob Zombie.
Yes, remember him.
Deftones, that dates it, 1999.
Excuse me.
Slayer.
Oh, yeah, good.
Oh, I love this one. Primus featuring Buckethead.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
System of a Down, Godsmack. Then there was a second stage.
So it's that weird sort of era, wasn't it, when those bands were getting, they would have pulled people in at that point.
Well, absolutely, late 90s.
Yeah.
There was a second stage. There's no one on the Oh, no, hang on. Fear Factory, I used to like them. Static X, I remember quite liking. But Slipknot were on the set. They were like, they were the coming
thing. The up and coming, yeah.
They were, on that tour, they were like what Metallica was on the Ultimate Sin tour, was it? So, those are the famous people. So we go to the thing and we watch it, and it's really good.
Yeah.
It is very good.
So who are the stars of it?
I would say probably Slipknot.
Right.
They were the ones that...
So is she interviewing the bands, or it's just a concert film?
Total Access. Right. I mean, that's the impression you get.
Yeah.
because Penelope was hot.
Oh yeah, yeah. Is Sharon in it?
Sharon is in it.
Yeah.
And this herein, allegedly is partly why the film's never been seen.
Because
This is like 2000.
Well, yeah. Presumably it's post 1999.
But just slightly before the Osbournes, which is key.
Yeah.
So Sharon's in it, but people only know her from the Osbournes or the X Factor or whatever, possibly are not aware.
Yes.
In the 80s and 90s in particular, Sharon was what these days is called plus size.
Right.
Plus size.
Right.
You know what that means, don't you?
Well, you're going back to this thing you were famously talking about on GB News.
No, I'm trying to find a polite way to say, you know, she was very overweight.
Right, right.
She was huge.
Right. I mean, that's not the polite way of saying it.
No. Now you come to mention it.
Yeah, yeah.
And she always
I mean, you know, it's a mark of her reinvention that she...
Listen, absolutely. Yeah,
essentially took over as the star of the family when Ozzy was no longer really able to.
Absolutely. But also super shrewd.
Yeah.
Always looking at the long term.
Yeah.
And what I was told, and I do not know if this is true, okay? So first of all, let me just say, John told me this, and I'm not sure if it's true. It was all ready to go, and then the Osbournes came out, and like that, everything changed. I mean, I was doing my Don Arden book, which Sharon asked me to do, and as soon as the Osbournes took off, suddenly that book...
You see, I don't know what you're talking about. Things change, Mick. That's what you have to understand. Things change, my friend.
Well, I don't know if this is malicious gossip, but someone told me that as soon as the Osbournes took off, Sharon killed the movie coming out.
Right.
Because she was very big in the movie. And by the time you... That's 99. By the time you get to, you know, the Osbournes 2 years later... You know, she, her and Ozzy were always having cosmetic surgery and lipo or whatever was going at the time. I mean, everybody does in Hollywood, you know. Mm. But that's what I heard. And I heard it really upset Penelope because apparently her and Sharon were like, you know, big mates. And so I don't know if there's any truth in that. But I tell you what, it's a shame because it to me, it was a great movie. Penelope really did well.
Mm.
You know, you're with the Slipknot guys as they come off stage and they take the masks
off.
Oh,
that, yeah.
And I think the singer, whose name I can't remember, is it Slip?
Yeah, or Knot, one of the two. Yeah.
That was Slip, Mr. Knot.
Yeah, yeah. So, famously, the son of former England wicketkeeper Alan Knot.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that because Alan used to wear that mask on his head, didn't he?
Just to freak the batter out.
Which worked.
Always
worked.
Yeah.
So
Alan Knott's coming off stage, taking his mask.
Yeah, son of Alan Knott. Unknown American.
Well, yeah.
And as he's taking it off, he's explaining how he's been sick inside it.
Oh.
Not for the first time.
Because,
you know, they're doing that energetic...
Jumping about.
All that stuff, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah.
And throws up in the mask. I think it started as a little bit of sick. You know, when you get a little bit of sick down your front there, John. You know, like you're sitting and you go, and there's a bit of trail of sick from your chin down to your willy. You know, you get one of those.
Yeah.
You know, John, you get that all the time. I know you do. Well, I think it started as a little bit of sick.
Right.
And then turned into
a lot of sick.
He was, as happened to Randy Meisner, he just got iller and iller.
Yeah.
So I found all this fascinating.
Yeah.
I'd never seen Slipknot live. I was like, wow, this is great. There's a really funny scene as well. I mean, just before they go on, in the tuning room, which is obviously just a little space back there, Iommi's in there, like, you know, practicing or whatever. And Ozzy comes in. And so obviously they do this every night. He's like, all right, Tony, Ozzy. Well, you ready? He goes, one. One, two, three, four. Finish with my woman. You know, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of it, someone, I can't remember who it was, but one of the journalists said, Sharon, do they do that every night? Yeah. They do a bit of paranoid. Because yeah. you would have thought they might know that one by now. Yeah. And she goes, oh, it's just a warm-up. It's because it's so easy for them to do it. Yeah. It's a warm-up. Yeah, that's why he's holding the lyrics. So now this...
So is it coming out now? This is what you're saying. It's going to be now going to be released.
Well, the link I got sent was it was like a special showing at the Academy of Film and Wank Pieces, probably in America. But you can buy tickets. And you know what they say? If you can buy tickets, there's no way this isn't going to do similar events, I would imagine. Because there's all that time has passed now. Yeah, it's over 20 years later. No one, you know, Osbournes or X Factor, or whatever, they don't, doesn't matter anymore. They know who she is. Yeah. Doesn't matter who she was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So apparently, and I promise you, it's a great, if you will, rockumentary.
I don't think you're going to be seeing it anytime soon.
Well, before we go.
Yes.
I thought, given that, because you haven't seen it, have you?
No.
Now, you weren't living in this country at the time of these seismic events.
No, well, probably not, no.
No, I think so. I can't remember. Because you definitely, well, mind you. what immediately springs, for you, John, in the realms of definitive, what other... if you will,
rockumentary
spring to mind?
Well, I mean, I suppose if you're looking at that era, actually, one I will say people should check out on YouTube, which is very funny, and it's just before that time, is a movie called Heavy Metal Parking Lot, which is precisely what
it sounds like a classic.
It's great. It is great. It's just, it's a Judas Priest gig. You know when Priest were sort of massive Priest were massive in the middle of the 80s, just before
in
the
America.
Sort of 87 thing. Priest had put out, I think, Point of Entry and a couple of...
British Steel.
Just post that. You know, they
Turbo British, was big.
Yeah, Turbo. Yeah, so they were in that phase where they were big in America.
Yeah.
And the tradition in America, if you've not been and haven't been to these gigs, there is... And it's the same true of sporting events as well in America. There's a sort of big culture of going to the parking lots of huge stadiums with massive out-of-town parking and taking a few beers. And
having a party.
And, having a party before you go to the show.
What are they?
Tailgate parties. Yeah. So someone took a camera down and just films. It's not very long. It's only like about 40 minutes long. But it's just talking to these kids about why they're at this Judas Priest gig. And it's just genuinely interesting and funny and fascinating. Just what they're dressed in, what they've come to do, what their lives are like. It's a brilliant little film. I think it's on YouTube. So Heavy Metal Parking Lot, I would recommend. And then obviously Decline and Fall of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years, is a masterpiece. Because it's very funny and sad and all of those things. And then, the Anvil documentary is brilliant, which is the one that kind of revived the, if you will, rockumentary idea.
What about Metallica's Some Kind of If You Will Monster?
Yes, we speak about that often.
But you put that on the list.
I think it's great, because it's got the psychiatrist in it above all else. Yeah. Nick, for you... What would you say?
So many, John. And I have to sort of separate them in my from the ones I've, made. Or
was I in it? That's the first question.
That touches on a sore point on one particular documentary that was called Heavy Metal.
Right.
That was made for the BBC Arena. Strand. In the late 80s.
The Strand of Arena.
Absolutely, and I was brought in as a consultant.
Well, yes, you would be.
Slash Oracle.
Yeah.
Slash great guy.
Yeah.
Just great guy.
Fixer,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I got Joe Elliott to fly in from Dublin, do a three-hour interview.
Yeah.
I got Jimmy Page, let us go to his house, and we did like a five-hour piece where he told us how he wrote Stairway to Heaven or whatever. Took Ozzy up to Birmingham, where the street where he used to live, the house where he used to live, the school he used to go to. That was okay. Put a lot of time and effort into this. Other things as well, Maiden, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
become the documentary. And I was like, am I going to be in this? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100.
Yes, Crusher, you're definitely going to be in it.
So I wasn't in it. Oh, we ran out of time, Mick.
Yeah.
There wasn't 1 second of Joe Elliott in it.
Ooh.
Jimmy Page, I think, was about, honest to God, John, 15, 20 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is Jimmy Page that important to the history of heavy metal? I mean,
it's Jimmy fucking Page. He hadn't been interviewed for years. It's only 8 years after Zeppelin broke up.
Yeah. Oh,
shut up. How dare you? You're just getting a rise because, you know, I'm passionate.
Yes, I can
tell. I'm very passionate. No, I'm passionate because I go to all this fucking trouble and these cunts don't use any. Joe Elliott flew in because we were meets. 3 hours, not put a fucking shot in.
Yeah.
Do you know who was in there for at least 15 minutes, maybe more, 20? Napalm Death. And I'm here to tell you that had nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that the female director was quite a fan. Shall we put it that way? So I became very disillusioned.
You became, astonishingly enough, readers, he became slightly bitter about what had happened.
But you see, John, hang on. We're going back 35 years.
I mean,
so
let
I'm
it
not
go.
One to...
hold on to a grudge.
No. Was it me and Taylor say to each other, shake it off, shake it off?
Yeah.
I said to her, Taylor, you should turn that into a song.
Yeah.
She went, shake it off. I said, look, get off my lap. Go and fucking with your fat bottom and go and, you know, write a hit.
So
I've never forgiven them for that. No. But cut to 2014, it's a vintage year for, if you will, rockumentaries.
Yeah.
And I've come up with an idea called Long Player. And it's about the history of albums.
Right.
By the time it went out, it was on BBC4, they changed it. The title to When Albums Ruled the World.
Oh, I remember that show. Yeah, you were on that. Was that the one where you said, everyone loves Ace of Spades?
No.
It
no,
was, I'm sure it
no,
was.
No, that was Channel 5.
Oh, was it?
This is 2014.
Right. Did you not
BBC
say it
4.
Then?
No.
Did you not think it then? No,
wait. I wrote the show, interviewed most of the people, was the co-producer. And it was a remarkable...
A huge success.
Huge. I tell you what it was. It became the most viewed original music programming on BBC4 ever.
It's just like being in the Amazon charts. You know, best book about fucking insects born in February.
No, you see, that's my friend. Well, you are wrong, I'm afraid. You're mistaken.
Oh, am I?
Yes.
Oh.
They re-showed it. They re-showed it. I think it was like 7 times that first weekend.
Yeah.
So, of course.
Yeah, viewing figures.
Every time they showed it, millions.
Filler, as
millions. No. Millions stopped what they were doing.
Yeah, and watched the Mick Wall presentation of When Albums Ruled the World.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
See, that was a good one. If you haven't, you can still see it on YouTube.
Yeah. So the reason you were so keen... to do a whole podcast about two obscure documentaries.
No, far
so you
from
could
obscure.
You could do that bit at the end where you said the one to watch is the one that I wrote and produced.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I hadn't
do you see what I mean?
No, I hadn't thought that through.
No,
you see,
you hadn't
given that due consideration.
Yeah.
Now, listen. Before we go, we must remind everybody. Although as of this second, I can't tell you any dates. I can tell you 1%.
Yeah, but that's because
we were
supposed to be going up to see the bloke.
I haven't been able to arrange that.
No, well, yeah.
But that's coming. That's coming. Yeah. And I'm hoping the next time you hear from us, well, before then, because we'll put it on social media.
Oh, all of this.
It'll be on
all
GB
of the outlets.
Big announcement.
Twitter
Sunday
X.
Express.
Yeah, Eamon Holmes will probably announce it actually on his show. Probably give you. Why don't we give Eamon the exclusive on the dates?
It's a good idea.
In the way that Rod Smallwood used to give us the exclusive on the Iron Maiden dates.
I'll tell you a funny one. Because over the years, I've done quite a lot of these bits with Eamon when he was on the radio and all the rest of it. And so I said, when they phoned me, I said, well, is Eamon? Eamon will be on, right? And they went, oh, yeah. I said, oh, great. I love Eamon. He's cool, you know. And they went, oh, no, we'll say, you know. I said,
you said, well, we're old friends.
Yeah. And they said, oh, no, we'll send him your best, yeah. So, Morning Live. Live. He goes, yeah, fat bottom girls or whatever. And he goes, and now we've got our music expert to tell us what it's all about, Mick Hall. I'm like, Eamon.
Eamon.
You know him, mate.
Don't you remember me?
So he was just joshing.
Yeah.
Just joshing.
Yeah.
You know, between one television veteran and one, another.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know.
Does he not know you used to have a show on Sky?
Does he what?
Not know about you used to have a show on Sky. Does he not know that?
I think everybody surely must by now.
By now.
By now. Aware. Well, if they don't, they'll soon find out when they watch I Wanna Rock.
I only do the quality.
See, quality stuff.
Yeah, high quality. You even do it when you don't know you're doing it.
Some are born with the gift.
Anyway, I Wanna Rock. Yeah. Expect the lawyer's letter.
And on that bombshell.
Yeah, for that bombshell for them.
Yeah.
Goodbye, but not good night.
Yeah.
You will be here. You will see me again.
Yeah. You will know my name, Mick Hall.
Yeah, goodbye.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
How do I stop this, Fern?